888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome in. It is the Friday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Drew at the controls. Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com is hanging out second time this week. Brian has come to spend the afternoon with us here on The Drive. Bill Cameron is on vacation. He should be back soon. We're not doing shows on Monday and Tuesday next week, but you should have Bill back on the air on Wednesday when we return after the holiday weekend. Hour number one of The Drive brought to you by our good friends at Kia of Auburn and KiaofAuburn.com. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. They also sponsor the hotline, 334-321-1390. You can text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. And they also sponsor the podcast, which is available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center. Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com hanging out in the Ronald Acuna T-shirt, courtesy of your beloved Atlanta Braves, rocking the red as they're playing extremely well. We were talking with Justin Ferguson about that a little bit on yesterday's show. But Brian, how are you? Happy 4th of July weekend. I think it's not too early to say that when it's the Friday before a Tuesday holiday. I don't know exactly what the rules are, but I'm going to go ahead and extend 4th of July salutations to you and yours, Brian, and really, thanks for coming and hanging out with us. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm sure all the people cruising down 65 South right now are probably, you know, thinking it's pretty much the holiday already too.
Yesterday's show actually a
231 South.
An odd amount of yesterday's show. Maybe it's because we were all in the studio. We were all hungry. An odd amount of yesterday's show became, I mean, we were talking about barbecue because Don Dunn's name came up and Terry Price's name came up, which can only lead to more conversation about barbecue. And then Justin was talking about going to Destin next weekend, and so I thought I'd extend some restaurant recommendations from my beloved hometown. What's your you go to the beach occasionally, right? Is there a spot on the Gulf Coast that you prefer? Do you have a preferred? Is that something you do, or am I getting you confused?
Yeah. We go down to Orange Beach a lot. Right?
Okay, yeah.
I love docks, that kind of hole in the wall place down there, and we're going down here for the holiday, but we're not going to Orange Beach. We're going farther down east toward Destin. So,
right on. It used to be a little bit more of a secret, right? The Florida Panhandle and the Gulf Coast and things like that. But the word is out, and folks know. And it's remarkable how developed it's become. And so, if folks are catching this either as a podcast or a live stream while they're enjoying their holiday, or if you're on the road, like Brian said, currently, and you're making the commute right now, be safe. You'll want to extend a safe and healthy and happy 4th of July weekend to everybody. Brian, I mentioned this earlier in the week. I don't know if it's, and maybe you can shed some light on this, I don't know if it's an old wives' tale or a thing we tell kids growing up to be careful, or if it's actually true that the 4th of July is consistently like one of the busier ER days of the year because of people playing with fireworks. Would you believe that if someone said, hey, yeah, usually the 4th of July is one of the busier days of the year for emergency rooms because of so much? I mean, I guess between
busiest
the
busiest night, maybe. Yeah,
yeah,
Halloween,
I mean, between the drinking and the fireworks, you know, I could sort of see like, yeah, it's probably, you know, that's one of those. That's
New
one
Year's
of those
Eve.
All hands on deck nights for Halloween and New Year's Eve are St. Patrick's Day. Yeah. There are a couple.
Anytime drinking is involved, yeah, right? That's going
to
be
Cinco de Mayo, I guess, jumps in there. Like, there's a couple holidays that have sort of been the you know what it is? It's the holidays you see in beer commercials.
Exactly.
The holidays they mention in beer commercials seem to be the busiest ones. A happy and healthy 4th of July to everybody. But Brian, it's we were saying the end of the College World Series is the beginning of whatever off season there is in college athletics, because there's nine and a half, 10 weeks or so between the end of the College World Series and when games are played for fall 2023, when things start up again for next year. That doesn't mean that there aren't going to be headlines. I mean, you have players, the baseball portal is open right now. The possibility is there for basketball players to still enter the portal, graduate transfer basketball players. I guess you could get news about, I mean, you could get bad news about football players at any time that could jeopardize their season. Media days is on the way. And there's also the chance that there could be moves made on coaching staffs. And we have, even though, you know, we're in the off season, like I was saying, we have a piece of news regarding Auburn baseball across the wire in recent hours, right? And I know you've been on it, that Auburn has the pitching coach resigned after his first year earlier this week, I think it was, right? Shortly after, yeah, Darren Schoenrock resigned shortly after the season ended, and Auburn has been on the lookout. They've been searching for a new pitching coach, and that search has come to an end.
Yeah, and it really wasn't much of a search. This is the guy that Butch wanted from the start, and they've hired, or he has hired, Everett Tieford. He's been with the White Sox for the past 6 years as their, well, he's moved up there, but for, I think the last three or four has been as their pitching coordinator. Has been very instrumental in the development of a number of their most highly regarded prospects in their organization. And he's a guy I think that's going to bring a lot of youthful energy. I think he's only in his 30s, 39, and a guy who's big on analytics, but also, you know, big on just being out there and helping guys improve their pitching too. So I think this is a great hire. I think Tieford is a guy that is going to be around for a while. Most of the pitching coaches that have come through Auburn have only been, you know, 2 to 3 years at most, but I think Tieford has a chance to stick here for a while and really develop some good pitchers for Auburn. I think he's going to be a really good recruiter once he gets, you know, used to that part of his duties. And I would not be surprised if he goes out there and really tries to find one of his guys in the portal here in the next few weeks.
Talking with Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here on the Friday edition of The Drive. I resolve not to say Monday because you're here. So I'm gonna work hard not to say that it's the Monday edition.
That's right.
Of The Drive.
Plus, this is Feel Good Friday. This ain't Blue Monday.
It's feeling all right. A little bit warm still, despite the fact that we had some thunderstorms here in the Auburn area. We'll mention the weather a little bit in honor of Bill Cameron, even though he's on vacation. But yes, and it's, I believe those heat indices are still looking like they could be really, really hot this weekend. So be careful, yeah. You know, and
Pay attention to the surf reports too. The flags don't take any stupid chances. There's been a lot of people dying already.
So. And I would say I don't know the number one the number one culprit or the number one thing that you got to worry about, but I would put dehydration near the top of the list. So take the necessary steps to protect yourself from the heat and from dehydration, especially, you know, like the folks you see out here working in the heat.
Yes.
Like, I mean, it just, I mean, to, hats off to them and everything. You know, we're all about the laborers here on the drive, and yeah, really appreciate folks that are out there getting the job done in this weather. Since we were talking about baseball anyway with the coaching search, there's been some movement in the portal. With the Auburn baseball team, they've made a couple of additions, right? There've been some, and I don't know. I think the one of the biggest tasks now for a coaching staff when the portal is open, it's not just landing your targets in the portal. It's retaining the players that you're counting on for next year on your roster right now.
Right.
And it seems like even if maybe Auburn hasn't had double-digit splashy signees in the portal, the fact that Auburn has some players that are seemingly signed up for next year at the moment that haven't gone into the portal seems like a positive news. But so far, what have you seen since the offseason started, since the portal opened? What can you tell us about the Auburn baseball roster?
Yeah, Auburn's got four that have already committed to come to Auburn. Only two have left. Cam Hill's already gone to South Alabama. I don't know if Ryan Dallas found a home yet. I haven't seen anything on that yet. But Auburn's filled needs so far. They went out and got a potential starting pitcher in Carson Myers, a left-hander from UAB. Started, I think, 12 or 13 last year, and led UAB with a 3.52 ERA. So that's a good addition, a guy that's going to come in right away and compete for a weekend spot for Auburn. And then they got that corner outfield in Mason Manners. Had 25 home runs, 110 RBIs in his career at Jacksonville State. 12 doubles, 12 home runs, 341 average last year. So this guy can hit the ball. They got a big DH in Christian Hall. He's 6'2", 230. Wants to come in and be a DH. He was at UAB and before that UT Martin. Hit 329, 20 doubles, 22 home runs, and 94 RBIs at UT Martin. So another guy's got a lot of power. He hits from, he's a left-hander too. Mason Manners is a left-hander. You got Ike Irish, who's a left-hander. Cooper Murray's a lefty. So that's four big bats that can hit from the left side in your lineup now, looking at next year. And they also got Cooper Weiss, who's a third baseman slash shortstop, was a MAC Defensive Player of the Year at Miami, Ohio last year. Hit 303, 15 doubles, a triple, 12 home runs, 45 RBIs, 17 stolen bases. So you got a guy who could potentially hit at the top of the order or close to it and is a very good defensive player, whether he lands at shortstop or third base.
It is remarkable how you're seeing, not just in Auburn, but I think in other spots in the sport too, you're seeing folks who they're ready to take the step up after a couple of years of Group of Five baseball or football. And I don't know if there's any real way to know how much NIL is influencing that and how much of it's a desire within the competitor to test himself against bigger competition. And also the chance that if you have a good season against that competition, it changes your professional prospects as well, and you can make an impact on the draft. I always think about Osiris Thomas Torrance was the offensive lineman at Louisiana.
Yep.
Went to Florida. Was a great.
Auburn tried to recruit him, but he had no interest.
Well, he reunited. I think there was an issue with the current staff, and he also had his former coach Napier, at Florida. So I think a lot of folks sort of thought it was a foregone conclusion. But he's somebody who's a great Sun Belt player, and this is there are parallels to the Auburn baseball team or the Auburn football team here too. Brian, great Sun Belt player who decides, all right, I'm going to take a step up and try my luck in the SEC. And he was a first-round draft pick this past year. Yep. I mean, this is a guy who Osiris Torrance was a first-round draft pick at Florida. And, I mean, there's I think a lot of college athletes are looking at, and I don't know if he would have been a first-round pick. The answer could be yes. Would he have been a first-round pick if he'd stayed at Louisiana and he'd continued playing well against Sun Belt teams?
Possibly. Right.
But did it probably help to jump to the SEC and play well against SEC defensive linemen and put that much film up for the draft? I think so. It probably did. It helped that he stayed healthy too and things like that. But having the season he did, a lot of players, not just at Auburn, but there are quite a few at Auburn that are looking at that and thinking, boy, if I can have a breakout season against SEC competition, it could be life changing, right? Yeah. Like if you have the kind of season, a great season, a special season after playing well at the Group of Five level or the mid major level in basketball and baseball, stuff like that. If that works, then you can hit the jackpot potentially. And I don't know. We'll see who it happens for. Because there's quite a few. We'll talk about some of the new additions to Auburn football and Auburn basketball when we come back. We got to take a break and end this segment. But there's a lot of angles, a lot of ways this could go. We'll be back with more. You're listening to the Friday edition of The Drive.
It's going to be spectacular.
Or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back. Hour number one of the Friday edition of The Drive. Happy 4th of July, everybody. Dan Peck in the studio. I was working so hard not to say Friday that I called Brian Matthews Justin, even though that's
okay.
That's not correct.
That's a compliment.
We had Ferguson yesterday. We had our buddy Jason Caldwell in the house on Wednesday. So we've had some help from some of the I think some of the sharpest tools on the beat. Right, like I think some of my absolute favorite, some of my absolute favorite guys covering the Auburn athletics beat between you and Justin and Jason, we've been able to have in there. So I just got something Justin podcast related right when we were coming back on the air. But it is the Friday edition of The Drive. I'm Dan Peck. Drew's at the controls. Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com is in the house, and I'll tell you what, Brian. Because I don't want to do this going into a commercial break so it feels rushed, I would like you to tell folks about the outstanding work that you guys are doing at AuburnSports.com. And even if you want to shout out other guys in the band, you know what I mean? Like let folks know who else is doing great stuff. By all means, do it. But yeah, tell folks about what's up at AuburnSports.com.
Well, I mean, there's not a whole lot happening right now as far as Auburn Sports goes, but there's still recruiting going on. They just hired, of course, a baseball coach, and there's portaling going on in baseball and softball and some other sports. So there's still some items to talk about and to get involved with. And plus, you've got the message board, the bunker, which is always very, very entertaining.
And the football preview engine is just starting to rev up, right? And we're getting closer to football preview season. Let me ask you something. You guys used to do, correct me if I'm wrong about this. You guys used to do a thing where each of the writers would submit a ballot listing.
Like top 20?
Top 20 or top 25.
That.
Okay, you're doing that. If you had to submit right now, who would be your candidates for number one? If you had to submit a ballot that was due like within the end of the hour, who would be sort of snap judgment candidates to be number one in your eyes going into this upcoming season for Auburn?
Well, I've actually been doing Auburn's top five, and I did offensive and defensive players. So, I mean, that's a good way to go. I would probably go with Jarquez Hunter and as number one. Dylan Wade would be up there.
Defense is interesting because I think there are a lot of different – I mean, there are, in my view, three players that have an argument, maybe more than three, as if you want to include Justin Rogers. Where it's like the most impactful defensive player on the team going into this season. I mean, you could say you could say DJ. You could
That's
say
what I want, number one.
You could say DJ. You could say Keontae.
In a sport where
the nickel corner is becoming more important by the season, right? Like where it used to be a given. Jason Caldwell made this point earlier this week, and he's absolutely right. It used to be a given that your best defensive back was your outside corner, your number one guy.
Yep.
Now, I mean, your nickel plays so much. Your star, like your whatever you want to call your number one inside defensive back at the line, and Keontae Scott, I thought he was. In a season where you had to struggle to find a lot of silver lining, right? Like last season, I think Keontae Scott's a guy, and his decision to stay, and DJ James's, his arrival and immediate impact was a big, and decision to stay matters a lot too. But those two guys, are big time for me. In the middle of those, I'm a huge Marcus Harris fan. I don't know if maybe I'm overrating him. Oh, is he your number two
on defense? Yep.
Yeah, Marcus Harris is number two. Okay, so then Behind him, I'm guessing Nehemiah's probably somewhere in that ballpark. He's four?
Yep, Kante was three. And then I had fifth on defense, Mosiah Nasilikite.
Oh, okay. You went with Marilyn Moe, all yep. right? A guy I like a lot who's, you know, he was hearing about him from other defensive players when we got to talk to players and coaches during the spring, right? It seemed like every time, especially a line of scrimmage player would talk to us, Mosiah Nasilikite would find a way into the.
Is that how you say it?
I believe okay. It's Mosiah Nasilikite. And his, but that's why I think Marilyn Moe is a little bit
easier for me, for sure.
A little bit faster to say, but no, he's somebody who could have a really important impact. I'm curious to see how the defensive linemen are deployed, right, between a Justin Rogers or a Jason Jones, a Marcus Harris, Marilyn Moe. I mean, these guys are. I mean, they're all options to move around there. It's like Kevious Walker is still here.
Yeah.
I mean, still right there in the room.
Maybe
as
this
well.
Is his year.
And yeah, a guy that. I mean, would it surprise you that much if it's all of a sudden? Hey, Kevious Walker's making a big impact and playing well. It hasn't lined up for him yet, but it's a very big recruit who's had to work through the adversity that everyone's had to work through around this program. For the last couple of seasons.
It might surprise me a little bit because he really hasn't played much the last 2 years, but I think it would be a really great surprise, and I'd be very happy for him, right? Because this is a guy, I know I've said it before, but he played as a true freshman for Rodney Garner. That, to me, says a lot about a player. I don't know everything that's gone into the last 2 years of him missing time. A lot of it's been injuries, I know, but I don't think anybody's given up on him, so maybe at a time when Auburn needs depth and help on the defensive line. They're not very deep. They don't have a bunch of playmakers there necessarily, proven playmakers. So this would be a great time for him to step up.
Okay, I got a question as far as your perceived value around the roster right now, in what we're talking about, where you're ranking guys. What do you think do you think Javarius is a clear-cut number one receiver compared to everybody else? And what do you think the sort of, like, how do you shape the wide receiver room,
right,
like, at the moment, or rank sort of where Auburn stands at wide receiver? Do you think it's sort of a top tier of players right now? Do you think, because of his production the last couple of years, Javarius is a cut above? Do you have anyone, like, do you have someone you expect to lead the team in different categories at catches and yards and stuff like that? Where are you wide receiver at this moment?
If I rank the wide receivers, I'd probably put Javarius top because he's a senior, because he's been there, he's done that, he's had successful and productive games in the SEC. But I wouldn't make it a big distance, right? Because we don't know what a Jair Shorter can do, or a Shane Hooks can do, or a Caleb Burton can do. Don't know exactly what Malcolm Johnson can do. Right, he missed spring. He's a guy with a lot of potential. Came in as a really, really young guy. So, still don't know. Still don't know exactly what a Jay Fair or a
how about this one?
Amari Kelly can do.
I'll throw that Coy Moore was a late arrival last year.
Candon Brown was just a true freshman last year. What can he do with the year under his belt in this system? So, I just think there are a whole lot of questions at the receiver position. There's going to be a whole lot of competition, and I expect the leaders, the top guys, will emerge as the season goes on. But I think it's fair to expect that Javarius Johnson will be a key part of that group. And he's really the only guy I can see is definitely going to be a part of that.
Right.
Even some of the transfers, you can't say that for certain. You don't know what's going to happen. Jair Shorter looks like a terrific athlete. He could be starting outside receiver, but he also has some injury history, so who knows?
Jarquez and Javarius both feel more proven in Auburn uniforms than anyone else at their respective positions. Although I was surprised to look back, and I mean, Javarius caught 26 passes last year, and Coy Moore caught 20.
Yeah,
like I thought there'd be a little bit more of a gulf as far as, and I think Tank actually led the team in receptions.
Well, of course, we got to remember that Auburn's passing attack last year was horrible.
Oh, I know. Yeah, right. I mean, absolutely for a variety of reasons. I mean, there are a couple of reasons. I think that there were questions about the scheme.
Yeah.
There were questions about the offensive line holding up against SEC competition. Yep. There were questions about who was actually playing quarterback and and the fit. Yeah, I mean, exactly. Yeah, it was it
not
was,
fair to put on the quarterbacks. I shouldn't have just said that, but yes.
No, a zero star review, right? I mean, tough to find a lot of things that you say. Oh yeah, this is a redeeming. No, so it's you're right. So and that's reason. So many of those things having changed seemingly going into the first game of 2023 is a reason why a player who struggled last year on this roster or a player who because I mean, I'll give you an example of that. Like the thought that so much around this program has changed that a receiver who struggled last season might suddenly be able to put everything together. Is you had players who stuck around between the 2008 season, the Tuberville year with Tony Franklin, right, where nothing worked offensively as the season went on. Chizik and Malzahn arrive, Trooper Taylor shows up to coach the receivers, and there were a couple guys, correct me if I'm wrong, Terrell Zachary turns around and has a really, really quality season in the first year. I believe by the end of the season, Cody Burns is playing well at wide receiver.
Slot.
Emery Blake. These are guys who end up being Darvin Adams. I mean, these were all players that were on the 2008 team.
And Except for Emery, right?
Maybe Emery was an 09. You might be right about that. But still, like a lot of these guys were options. They had but so much changed. And so you were listing receivers from last year's team, Camden Brown. Some of the freshmen, like I think that the chance
Amari Kelly, Jay Fair.
The chance that it clicks for one of them is, I mean, I don't know if I would put all my chips in on this specific guy and say, right. Oh yeah, he's going to have a breakout season. But the chance that one of them does is, I mean, it's right there. We've seen things like that happen in college football before. And while we're talking receiver, there's also the chance that Caleb Burton makes good on all that potential because he might have been the biggest deal of everyone in the wide receiver room. He might have been the highest profile recruit coming out of high school. And you've followed this long enough, Brian, to understand talent can win out.
That's right.
Talent can win out in these situations. And sometimes you bet on the guy with the pedigree to become a really special player. And a lot of time those guys end up making good on that ability eventually in their college football careers. Yep. Let's take a break. We'll be back with more. We're talking with Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here on the Friday edition of The Drive.
334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back. Hour number one of the Friday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio with Brian Matthews. Drew at the controls. Brian from AuburnSports.com. Hey, Brian, are you interested in the new Indiana Jones film?
Honestly, no.
Really? Okay.
Yep.
Are you a fan of the others?
Yeah, somewhat, but I'm not a big fan of them. I like them. I enjoy them.
Interesting.
But,
yeah. Would you?
At least the first couple, I'd say. I don't know about the other ones.
Would you be more interested if they'd recasted with a younger actor and said, we're just starting Indiana Jones over again with someone who's not Harrison Ford? Or do you think?
Probably not, because I just get tired of something after the fourth and fifth, and you know, I just stop.
I think the first, now, I mean, these are 30 something year old films, right. But I know the fourth one is more recent than that, but the first three, I mean, Raiders came out in the early 80s, Temple of Doom came out in the early 80s,
yep.
And then I think either 89 or 90 was the third one, the one with Sean Connery.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're all great. Like the first three are all home run action adventure movies. If you haven't seen them, like there's some intense scary moments for a family film, a PG film.
Yeah.
But like I'd say, all told, just really, you know, worthwhile, great films. The fourth one, a little bit more dicey as far as the results you get. But there's, you know, some great stuff. But yeah, I find myself maybe wondering if they should have left this one alone as well, you know, rather than try to mine the franchise for
More money.
Although, yeah. You know, Harrison Ford's really shown a willingness to, like, do franchise stuff, like, lately. You know, he's gone back to Star Wars. He went back to Blade Runner. Now he's back to Indiana Jones. So maybe he's having some fun, you know, not you know, while he still can. But it's, hope he's enjoying himself.
I can't really think of any movies that I know are coming out that I really am dying to see in the theater that I can't just wait and watch whenever it pops up on, you know, streaming services.
Interesting. Mission Impossible doesn't do it for you?
Definitely not.
Oh, yeah, really?
I didn't even watch the other Mission Impossible.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
How about that?
But I've heard good things about them. I just haven't sat down and watched them. I'm just not a big Tom Cruise fan, to be honest with you.
I'm in on Oppenheimer. I want to see the Oppenheimer, the Christopher Nolan Oppenheimer films coming out at the end of the year. At the end of the month. A lot of folks fired up for Barbie.
I mean, the Marvel movies I would normally be interested in, but they've all been so bad. I'm like, no, I'll just wait. It's just not worth it. They've been very average to below average so far. I even got average reports from the new Guardians of the Galaxy, which is one I was thinking would be great.
I got people in the text box saying Temple of Doom's no good, the second Indiana Jones movie. That's crazy talk. That's a Spielberg. That one's great too. Some spooky stuff going on in that Temple of Doom movie. They take the raft down the mountain. I believe it takes place in India. I think that woman is married to Steven Spielberg now. The woman, the lady from Temple of Doom. So
yeah,
Kate Capshaw. Yeah. The Indiana Jones coming out today. So that's it does feel like the summer blockbuster is back though. Even if you're not necessarily as fired up for these franchises and what they're going on, it does feel like there's a big happening at the, you know, coming out every week or so. I wish more of them. I found myself fired up for, but there are
the Star Wars. You know, that'd be something I normally go see, and just they were so bad.
Yeah,
that last one was so. I mean, almost walk out of the theater bad, so bad. But I tell you one thing, I am excited about is The Witcher season 3. I think is out now. That's something up.
You're with the Superman fella. You're a fan of the.
Yeah, yeah.
You're a fan
this is his work. Last. But they're replacing him with Thor.
Oh yeah,
right. Yeah, yeah. I think so. But right now I'm in the middle of watching season 1 and season 2 over before I start season 3 again.
Of Witcher?
Yeah.
334-321-1390, the number to dial as we are talking with Brian Matthews about anything you want to talk about in the world of sports or beyond. You know, I think about Tony Kornheiser used to do, you know, this is information for life, right? I mean, sometimes Justin Ferguson and I talked about different Auburn sports for a while yesterday, and then he mentioned he was going to Destin, and I casually tossed out a pizza place that I recommended to him when he's down in Destin, and that got people far more fired up than far more fired up than our sports.
Look, if I'm going to the beach, I'm getting seafood.
Oh, for sure. I mean, and
now
that's,
if I'm down there a week, maybe a pizza place.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, this is somewhere I used to live, right? So I mean, it's like I'm not. Yeah, I wouldn't say Destin's not necessarily a pizza hotspot or anything. But if you're there for a week with family or something, you know, this is like a really solid countertop service. You know, pizza place, something like that. I agree. So, what's your go to? If you're imagining like seafood dinner on vacation, what's got to be?
To the old rundown docks in Orange Beach and getting their shrimp basket.
Oh yeah, getting fried shrimp.
Yeah.
I went to when I was in Pensacola. I went to one of those. I went to a place that does, you know, the steamed in the bag with the corn and the potatoes and just on Bill's recommendation. Load it up on, because if you're getting it by the pound, you get headless shrimp. You know, you don't do them with the heads in there, because you know you just want more. You want more of that of the good stuff. And I devoured it. It was like, you ever seen one of those underwater documentaries with the whale and the plankton just sucking it up like that was me with this shrimp in the bag. I mean.
You're lucky just opening your mouth. And
yeah,
shoving
I was
in there.
Lucky to get the peels off, right? I mean, so it was. I'm right there with you. It's one of knowing that I'm gonna get super high quality seafood is one of the cool things about the Sun Belt Tournament being in Pensacola. Like knowing that there's going to be, you know, at the end of February, beginning of March, there's going to be some real good stuff there on the menu down in the Gulf. That's one of the among other cool. I mean, it's actually. It's a great event they do, you know, like the different fan bases travel and the weather's nice and there's lots of cool stuff about the conference tournament being in Pensacola, but the seafood is a perk for sure. Food came up a lot this week because we were talking about Don Dunn and Terry Price. You know, when you get talking to those two, barbecue becomes the subject, Brian, and then that gets y'all into That gets you into all kinds of different food groups and things like that. We'll talk about, we'll talk a little more sports when we come back after a what I think was a thoroughly nonsensical segment about Indiana Jones and seafood. So we'll be back with more. You are listening to the Friday edition of The Drive.
Auburn Networks LLC is
Com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back. Final segment of hour number one here on The Drive. Brian mentioned it during the commercial break. And a I guess this is a little bit inside media for people who don't work in the sports journalism field, but a lot of very familiar names laid off by ESPN earlier today, including some folks that have been with the network for a long time. Susie Kolber was in year 28 at ESPN. She was the host of Sports Night on ESPN2 when it premiered in the early 90s, and had been, I guess she left for Fox Sports briefly and then came back to ESPN, but she'd been at ESPN for most of her career, nearly 30 years with the network. She'd been hosting Monday Night Countdown since 2015. Steve Young, who also appears on Monday Night Countdown, was laid off. He had been with ESPN since 2006 and was one of the longest tenured panelists with any ESPN sport. Max Kellerman and Keyshawn Johnson were very recently hosting ESPN Radio's morning show. I believe even at the beginning of this month, they were still the hosts of the ESPN Radio morning show with Jay Williams. They've both been laid off. Johnson was reportedly into he was less than a year into a 5-year, $18 million contract. He may be in talks to join Shannon Sharp at FS1 on or to replace Shannon Sharp on the Skip Bayless show on FS1. Todd McShay was laid off. NFL draft analyst Todd McShay, who is I feel like was a was a fixture of that network, especially
Kiper
as the
still there though.
Kiper's still there, but McShay and Kiper were both. McShay was also doing college football broadcasts, things like that. June Lee, who was an Around the Horn panelist and Major League Baseball writer. David Pollack, college football analyst, longtime. I mean, a fixture on College Game Day. So somebody that I thought David Pollack was sort of being groomed to replace Herb Street on game day if Herb Street ever, needed to make that change. Remember, there was talk that Herb Street could be pursued by Monday Night Football or even a different streaming service or things like that. You know, it felt like at one point David Pollack was going to become a more permanent part of the College Game Day broadcast. He has been laid off as part of this this round of layoffs by ESPN.
Chris Berman's still there?
I think Berman is still part of ESPN Plus, where they do the his football recap. But I don't know how much, and maybe they bring him back for the Home Run Derby. I don't know. I don't know if that's true. I think that's right. I think they just Berman might just do Sunday nights for football games to recap the NFL, like the day in the NFL and the Home Run Derby. Although I don't know for sure if he does the Home Run Derby. But I know that was like that was something that he had been doing for a long time, even when they'd scaled back some of his other duties with the network. So, yeah, some changes to ESPN coming. Jeff Van Gundy also let go. Jeff Van Gundy was one of the he was part of their lead color commentary team with basketball he was part of their lead team for NBA games. So it's some familiar names let go by ESPN. I'm checking by the minute to make sure I'm not on the list. Like as of now, Drew, we are okay. Like so it's stay tuned.
Probably wait till 6, right?
Stay tuned. Yeah. Stay tuned for the next hour and 9 minutes to see if we survived this round of ESPN layoffs. You know, it really does.
It's like all the lights are off and back, so you
might
be safe.
It stinks for it. I make jokes, but it's awful for some of those, and you know what, the people, I think it's an easy reaction to think, well, the people whose names I know and the ones who have been on television and certainly the ones that came to ESPN after a long career in professional sports, they will probably be fine financially. I think there are other people being laid off today where it's a little bit more perilous for them as far as what the future could hold and things like that. So it's a it's sad and it's also an unfortunate thing for a lot of families being sort of uprooted by this round of layoffs. But it's a apparently part of the necessary economic measure by ESPN. But yeah, there's a 16 years for Jeff Van Gundy with ESPN calling games, and he was also laid off today. So yeah, a group of prominent analysts, journalists, and former players and coaches that were part of this part of a prominent group of names let go earlier today by ESPN. Hour number two coming up on the Friday edition of The Drive as we settle into an off season. I do want to get Brian's thoughts. We were talking about this with Justin Ferguson yesterday, Brian. The SEC-ACC challenge matchups were revealed earlier this week, and we found out another basketball game that Auburn's going to play in November.
Dumb job by those guys. Just dumb.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if they were beholden to some kind of system, if they had an algorithm or if they had a formula that they were trying to use to match things up.
Common sense. How about that algorithm?
Yeah, it just seemed like very few. Maybe the belief was that because so many of these games are going on at the same time, that you just need two or three marquee matchups and then the other ones don't matter and you can put them into a tumbler and just figure it out. And so, because maybe the promotion is going to center around Duke, Arkansas, and Tennessee, Carolina. And they figure the other 12, 14 games, whatever it is, don't matter in the SEC-ACC challenge. Because you're right. Seems like they could have done a, you know, they could have been more creative with some of these. You look at Auburn, and nothing against Virginia Tech, but
right.
Auburn has a history with Virginia that would have been obvious,
right?
To send A&M to Virginia Tech because right. Buzz Williams is the former coach.
I mean, how do you not do this?
Or even I would say to give Auburn Boston College because it's Coach Pearl's alma mater would have been more special.
Sure.
Like to allow Coach Pearl to coach at his alma mater or to bring Boston College here would have been more special than a meeting with Virginia Tech that almost feels like, you know, they had leftover programs that they mixed and matched nearly at random. So Duke and I don't want to pan it completely. Duke Arkansas will be a fun matchup. Carolina Tennessee will be an interesting enough matchup. Those are probably going to be matchups of teams that are picked in the top three of their respective leagues going into the season. Because I think right now where we stand, I'm thinking either Arkansas or Tennessee is the preseason pick to win the league, and the other one is number two. Carolina and Duke are two of the top teams in the ACC. I don't know if they're going to be the top two teams in the eyes of voters going into the season. You got Virginia, you got Miami. It's a good Miami team. Could throw a wrench in these things as well. But I mean, so I think there are two or three matchups where I'm like, yeah, that makes sense, and that's going to be fun. And then the rest of them feel like, you had to make a sandwich with what was left in the
ham sandwich.
You had to make a sandwich, what was left in the fridge. Couldn't get creative with the ingredients. I don't know. White bread, ham sandwich, Brian Matthews. Mm. And we're back to food. All right, we'll be back with more. You are listening to the Friday edition of The Drive. 334-321-1390 is the number to dial. Stick around. We'll be back.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Friday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio, Drew at the controls, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com hanging out with us on a steamy Friday. You've got a little bit of rain. You got some heat. Be careful out there. 4th of July weekend, so enjoy your holiday safely and responsibly. But, and I know some folks, I guess, have to work on Monday, the 3rd. We've got the show off on Monday and Tuesday, so we'll be taking a little break. We'll be back on Wednesday following today's show. But, yeah, enjoy your holiday weekend. Hour number two of The Drive brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. You can call the Kia of Auburn hotline, 334-321-1390. On the Kia of Auburn hotline, they sponsor hour number one. You can also text the show, 334-564-1340.
There you go.
On the Drive text box.
It's in
presented.
There.
It's Friday. Drew and I were just trying to communicate non-verbally while I was doing the reads, and it didn't really work out, and we ended up breaking character for a second. So you can text the show, 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box. That's presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, which is available however you listen to podcasts. Love to hear from you, and my goodness, a full bank of calls, Brian. Let's get rolling.
Let's go.
As we've got Jerry on the line to start hour number two. Jerry, what's up?
Hey, guys. I was very interested in the Auburn baseball news, the new pitching coach, the recruits. And I'm just a little worried about the Major League Baseball draft. I just hope we don't get hit too hard.
Yeah, who are you? Let me ask you, Brian. Who do you think could be players that are there Auburn baseball players you expect to be drafted? Are there players that you think could have a decision to make as far as where they're drafted and what kind of, like, who are the swing votes, the hinge players for Auburn going into the draft, which I believe is a week from Sunday. So we're coming up on the start of the 2023 Major League Baseball draft.
I would say the Emerson kid, the shortstop, is a guy that probably lean into going. Kevin McGonigal, he's also a shortstop, but I think he's probably a second baseman future who can absolutely smash the baseball. That's going to be the most interesting one to watch for me, whether or not he is drafted high. And it's not really if he's drafted or not, because the decision about that is made before the actual draft, right? These players are going to talk to these major league teams, and they're going to say, this is what I want. If you're willing to draft me at this amount in this spot, then I'll go. If not, I'm going to college. So those teams will know that, and there'll probably be some sort of agreement in place whether or not that happens. So if a guy is drafted early, he's most likely 90%+ gonna sign. If not, he's going to college. So.
What about Joseph Gonzalez? Because that's the player to me where I expect him. I think he's going to get drafted, but the injury could scare teams away. And I think if he's not drafted where he would like to be, that's a guy who could come back to college, have a great season, and drastically change his draft outlook for the 2024 season. What do you sense is going on with Joseph?
Well, they're doing a lot of pre-draft stuff this week, meeting up there, talking with scouts, et cetera, et cetera. I have not heard anything since then. I think he has a decision to make. Let's put it that way. My guess would be going into this week, it was probably 60-40 to Lee, but we'll see how that goes. I think, though, if he does opt to go ahead and be drafted, that's going to free up some NIL scholarship money for new baseball pitching coach Everett Tiefer to go out there and maybe find another guy who really, fits all his analytical and such things that he really likes in a pitcher and go out and bring him in.
Jerry, anything else?
That was my next question. But one other thing, what about the renovations on Plainsman Park?
So they've the university has released a more detailed sort of timeline of what they want done this offseason, what they want done next offseason. I think there might even be a third year of construction. I don't know.
Different things to clean up by year three.
But there's the priority. Yeah, go right ahead with it, Brian.
I was going to say, okay, so the first thing they're going to work on is going to be called the Hall of Fame Club. And what it's going to consist of is two rows of seats right behind home plate, nicer, you know, full back seats, right? Leather, I think, or whatever the former leather is. You can put outside in the rain and still hold up fine. And there's also going to be a Hall of Fame Club located inside, you know, underneath the stadium, you know, where you have like a place for refreshments and to hang out, food, watch TV, air conditioning, that kind of stuff. And then
lounge, too.
Yeah, you also have your own private entrance there. And if you're a season ticket holder, you can add on to your season tickets access to the Hall of Fame Club, which I think is really, really nice. So that's going to be done before next season. So that'll be great.
Have they started on it?
They're not starting until later in July. I don't know the exact date for that. Then there are a couple of things that will be coming before the 25 season. That's going to be your home plate club, which is basically taking over the existing press box area, which is, you know, up behind home plate at the top, converting that to premium area. And then also the first base club is coming for 2025, which will be a third tier down the first base right field line, which will include more premium seating. The press box is going to move there. Underneath that, there will be more places to have different refreshments and stands and stuff there. So that's all coming in the next 2 years. And also coming, I think, by 2025 is the general admission addition above the Green Monster and left, which I think is going to be super nice and should get a lot of people excited about that. And then eventually coming, whether it's year two or year three, is going to be upgraded locker rooms, upgraded coaches' offices. I think they're moving one of the bullpens for sure. I can't remember if there's some other small things there. So a lot that's going to be happening over there for the next 2 or 3 years. And then I think when that's done, I think Butch and his team will probably go out there and, you know, at some point in the future, I'm not saying right away, but try to generate some more money and do a round two of expansions and improvements at Plainsman Park.
Hey, that's some great news. And I hope y'all all have a great 4th of July.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. Appreciate it, Jerry. Thanks for the phone call. 334-321-1390. The number to dial. Spectre, we would have loved to hear from you. I promise if you call back, we'll get you on. But in the meantime, let's check in with our buddy Bill. What's up, Bill?
Hey, guys. I wanted to ask Brian real quick while you got in there. I know it's a long process, but Brian, do you anticipate, things look like they're going pretty well, but I still don't see a lot of offensive linemen in the group. Are you optimistic about that changing as the summer goes on?
No, I think that's a really interesting question because Khalil House, a guy that Auburn had in for an official visit, I guess it was 2 weeks ago, a guy that pretty much was Auburn, you know, all the way after that official visit. Stanford got in late. They got him in for an official visit the last weekend, and he went ahead and committed to Stanford today. So that's one that sort of got away. But that does happen, right? And Auburn does not have a commitment from an offensive lineman just yet. However, I would say they brought in, I think it was 5 offensive linemen that last weekend along with House. And I think one guy, some of them are sort of going to be tough. I think Daniel Calhoun's probably going to be Georgia, Alabama. I'd be surprised if Auburn can get in there. We'll see on Casey Poe, but he has offers from everybody. He's from out there in California. But Jamison Riggs from over there in Hiram, Georgia, another big dude, he's down to Auburn, Georgia Tech, and Clemson. So that is definitely one to watch here in the coming days and weeks. And I would also point out that if you go back to last year's class, Connor Liu was a late flip, right, from Miami. Who's that big tackle? Tyler Johnson, is that his name, I think? He was a late addition to the class. Clay Whedon, I don't remember if he was a flip or not, But he was definitely another guy that was sort of a late addition to Auburn's class. So they did a great job down the stretch, I thought, going out there and getting some really good offensive linemen to close out last year's class. So it is going to be a process there. And that's one of those positions I had to work hard on. But the thing I like about Auburn is Jake Thornton is a terrific offensive line coach and recruiter, I believe. And Hugh Freeze has a great history of recruiting and developing and some top-tier offensive tackles. So I think that's an area that Auburn will excel out. It just hasn't popped yet in the 24 class.
Yeah, and that's always concerning because obviously this has been going on a while. And you're right, we did pick up, I think Clay Whedon committed when I might be mistaken, but I think Harsin was still the coach.
Yep, you're right. I'm looking at it now. It was back in October before Carson was let go. But the new staff liked what they saw from him. But Tyler Johnson was a December pickup, which was really big out of Mississippi, a 6'7", 300-pounder there. And, of course, Connor Liu. And then I know there was one other one. Xavier Miller, the JUCO kid, who has 2 or 3 years of eligibility left. Also is a guy that can play right tackle that'll be back next year.
All right, well, I appreciate the information. You guys have a great weekend.
Outstanding stuff, Bill. Appreciate the phone call. Yeah, good questions there. I think there are people who like the headwinds in recruiting, but would like to see maybe a couple more names sign up. And offensive line recruiting it's been such a problem. It's been such a thing that folks are focusing on for so many years, especially when the teams on your schedule recruit linemen the way Bama and Georgia do.
Exactly.
Like, I think that ratchets up the pressure and the importance of something like that. If you're in, I'm not even going to name the league, right? But if you're in a league where no one is recruiting line of scrimmage players the way the teams on Auburn's schedule recruit line of scrimmage players, maybe it's not as important to land the best ones that you can get as early as you can get them. But that's not the situation Auburn's in. Like, Auburn's in a situation that's not the reality Auburn faces. The reality Auburn faces, we were talking about the transfer portal earlier, Brian, in a different capacity, but that's one position where, not just one position, that's one spot on the field. And I know Auburn is going into this season with two tackles and a center they found in the transfer portal.
Probably all three starting, most likely.
And Justin Rogers as well, so maybe one of the most important defensive linemen also having come to Auburn this offseason via the transfer portal. But I don't know if that's something you would want to sustain moving forward, right?
No, it's not.
I mean, I think that it's because you can find good, and maybe even, like I was saying with Osiris Torrance earlier, maybe you can even find NFL first-round pick quality line of scrimmage play in the transfer portal, but that still feels like most of the players with that kind of ceiling are choosing a place in high school and sticking with it for 3 years before going pro. I don't know how many impact players on the offense and defensive line are switching teams via the transfer portal every year. And so to try to build maybe at other spots on the field, you could say, we're going to get veteran transfers, and that's going to be the crux, the foundation of our team. But on the offensive and defensive lines, it feels like
it doesn't work like that.
You need to be landing these guys out of high school.
And if you look at Auburn's roster right now, they've got I think 15 scholarship linemen. I believe 10 are juniors or seniors. So there's going to be massive turnover there and next year and the next year. And I would say that offensive line and defensive line are two of the highest priorities Auburn needs to fill in the 24 class. They don't have any commitments there yet, but that doesn't mean it's not a priority. It doesn't mean they're not recruiting some really good players. It just hasn't popped yet as far as commitments.
And you could see, a youth movement, as dangerous as it is to put first or second year players on the field on the offensive line, starting out. I would look at Connor Liu.
Oh, if he's not starting this year, he's definitely starting next year.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't rule out that he's starting this year because you've got Avery Jones coming in, from the transfer portal. You've also got Connor Liu maybe in the battle at guard.
I think he'll battle at guard, and if he doesn't win that starting job, I think he's going to work at guard and center, because I feel like he's probably Auburn's starting center in 2024.
Yes, I think
Avery Jones is a one-year player. Gunnar Britton is a one-year player. Jalen Wade has a couple years of eligibility, so he could be back as Auburn's left tackle.
It's probably Cam Stutz's last year in college football. Yep. Cam Stutz could get a lot of snaps at guard, and so yep. I mean, there's
Jalen Irvin's moving yep. on, so there's going to be at least five spots available, and you don't know if Jalen Wade has a great year, he could decide to go.
Yeah, I'm a big Connor Lue fan from what we heard so far that he was as ready to participate with the upperclassmen. Right, I mean that was one of the things we heard in the spring was that yep. this guy is. Maybe he's not right now ready to be a starting offensive lineman in the SEC, but he's battling with guys that are going to be starting offensive linemen in the SEC, and he doesn't look out of place.
No, he does not. He is a good player now. He's going to be a really good player. I think he's going to be Auburn's best center since Restus Mukes, and I believe Restus Mukes, didn't he start as a true freshman?
Yeah, he did. He did. Ryan Pugh got some run as a yep. true freshman too. I think he played more tackle than center. But Ryan Pugh got some run in, yep. at that position as well.
If you look at the guard position, it's going to be one of Auburn's most competitive for fall camp because you got five guys all competing for that. You got Jeremiah Wright coming back from his injury. You got Connor Lue, who we just mentioned. You got Jaden Muskrat coming in, the other Tulsa transfer. You got Tate Johnson.
And Cam Stutz.
Yeah, I mean, and you can't necessarily say which one of those – which one of those five are going to be the starters. You can't really say that.
And I think they want Izavian Miller to be the third tackle. I think that's what they imagined him. But
he worked mostly at right tackle behind Gunner.
Didn't see him working at guard very often in the spring.
But he could. He definitely could.
I wouldn't rule it out if you know it's about getting the five best guys on the field. And if he's a giant incoming junior college lineman mm-hmm. or a true freshman that people think could be the center of the future, yeah, guard is a position where that's great, but who are the two best guys right now? And whoever they are. Let me ask you this. If you had to guess, and mm-hmm. we're going to take a break, but if you had to guess between, let me do this off the top of my head, between Stutz, Wright, mm-hmm. Muskrat, Johnson, and Connor Lue, which one do you feel most confident is a starter week one at guard?
Tate Johnson, if healthy. Remember, he missed. He was a starter at center. Had surgery on his elbow, and then had an elbow injury. Thought he was out for spring and came back from that, right? So if he can stay healthy, Tate Johnson. And then I love Jeremiah Wright. I love the way he plays football. I want Jeremiah on the field. I want him knocking heads. I don't care if he gets a 15-yard penalty once in a while.
Yeah.
I want him on that field. That's what Auburn needs on their offensive line. They've been too soft, in my opinion, for too many years. They need a Jeremiah right on the field. They need to make sure he's ready to go, of course, but they need him out there.
Well, and he's got to cut back on the 15-yard penalties, too.
Sure.
Like, I mean, I understand. Like, there's to an extent, there is a point where aggressiveness stops playing in your favor,
and when you're dragging a guy like him out there.
Oh, I agree.
I think Tate Johnson plays similarly. I think he just gets after it.
That's interesting because I think if I had been asked that question.
Because you could say Cam Stutz, and you could say
Jaden Muskrat had
Jaden
a lot
Muskrat
of options.
Jaden
Muskrat is a let's be clear about this. Jaden Muskrat is an Arkansas kid that had a chance to play on Arkansas's offensive line this year and turned it down to come to Auburn.
Yep.
And that a guy like that probably doesn't profile as a backup. So, I mean, I wonder if Jaden Muskrat's coming in and winning one of these two guard spots immediately. Jeremiah, I agree with everything you said, with the caveat that it can go too far and hurt you. Most of what he brings I absolutely love. And Cam Stutz is someone that for years feels mm-hmm. like whenever anyone in the program is asked about Cam Stutz, they'd said if called upon to be one of the guards, he would run with it. He would hit it out of the park. And then like everything you said about Tate Johnson is true as well. Which is I'm guessing maybe Muskrat, but Jeremiah Wright is a perfectly good answer too. But you're right. That is a position where at least you're not doing this at every position seemingly on the field. There's a couple spots where it feels like Auburn has a very good idea who the starter is going to be, but there are a couple spots you're right where he could go in five different directions, potentially. We'll be back with more. You are listening to the Friday edition of The Drive. Stick around. Experience and knowledge.
from the pro at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Friday Drive. July 4th weekend getting started. We will be off the air on Monday and Tuesday. I mean, the station will be on the air. In fact, we'll have the I think we'll have the Braves game on July 4th because we won't we'll have ESPN Radio's coverage of the Atlanta Braves because we will be off we will not be doing a show on Monday or Tuesday. The Drive will be taking the holiday weekend off, taking a little extra time. We'll be back on Wednesday. Might have Brian Matthews come in at some point next week because Monday is a holiday, so we might coordinate with Brian and try awesome. To have a try to have a special visit next week. Although Brian's been generous enough with his time to pop in and do a second day this week, so it's been great to talk with Brian. And people have some recruiting questions during this dead period, and with Hugh Freeze trying to continue. To gain momentum heading into the 2023 season, and it's been great to get a little extra time with Brian Matthews. Love to hear from you, 334-321-1390, and let's get back to the phones. I think Spectre has called us back. Spectre, what's up?
Hey, I got a couple of things to talk about. First thing is what y'all were talking about earlier about ESPN laying off all their analysts, and you know, ESPN is owned by Disney.
It's Disney, yeah.
Yeah, and, Disney's paying the price for their woke policy, so, it's not a surprise.
I think ESPN's got bigger problems than perceived woke policies, though, Spectre, because you look, and cable subscription numbers are declining every year, and I just don't know how you reverse that trend or if there's anything you can do to reverse that trend. And a cable network like ESPN, you know, they're so reliant on subscription fees from cable providers. And I saw a number recently, and it was something like 120, 130 million Americans subscribed to cable in 2015, and that number is down into the 80 million range. And if the trends continue, it could be in the 50 million range in a couple of years. And that's a huge hit to all of these companies that sort of, I mean, I think that the companies that own cable news networks have to be concerned about that trend. And certainly the parent companies of Fox Sports or ESPN have to be concerned about those trends and wonder. I mean, this gets back to when the ESPN, you know, when people were wondering, oh, hey, is ESPN going to cough up the $100 million to add an extra conference game to the SEC schedule? I'd be worried about making any sort of obligation like that if the cable subscription numbers keep plummeting.
Yeah. Okay. I hear what you're saying, but I'm telling you, Disney holds the purse.
Absolutely. But I would worry about the economics of cable in general. Like, I'd be thinking that, like, ESPN and maybe, you know, ESPN's even talking about going over the top and offering people, you know, subscription to just, you know, to the ESPN family of networks without needing a cable subscription. That would be such a huge shakeup because I think there are people probably who subscribe to cable just for access to ESPN and the ESPN networks. Yeah. And if you took that away, like, that would be, you know, if you offered that without a cable subscription, it would be a major change to that model. But I get what you're saying, and I think that the polarizing politics are certainly part of it, but I think that ESPN's problems have a lot more to do with people are getting more and more comfortable just getting rid of cable.
Yeah, whatever. Let's move on to NASCAR. You know, to stay on that subject just for a second or two now, I don't want to dwell on it, but NASCAR is continually digging herself out of a hole from 2 years ago. With that being said, NASCAR is doing something that they've never done before this weekend. They're having a street race in Chicago. That's similar to what Grand Prix does around the world. But it's going to be a street race in downtown Chicago. And I think it's going to be on 4 o'clock Sunday on NBC.
That's really cool. I've heard, the NASCAR Chicago street race going on. That's going to be... don't know, that could be really cool. The Grant Park, the Grant Park 220 or whatever they're whatever they're calling it, that could be. I enjoy when NASCAR, nothing against like the historic tracks or anything, but when you take NASCAR to a sort of an unusual environment, whether it's the dirt track, right, or even the nighttime races, like there does seem to be a different sort of energy and excitement to something like that.
Yeah, they were losing ticket sales for the last couple of years, and they're doing everything they can to try to move that up, which is, it's a good thing because it is interesting, the dirt tracks and the Coliseum race in L.A. and so on.
I've heard people rave about NBC's coverage versus the coverage that maybe some other TV networks have provided. I got a buddy who's into motorsports and says, yeah, NBC's coverage of these races has been top notch compared to what some, I guess Fox's coverage, you know, specifically, but also maybe even some of ESPN's coverage.
Yeah, I agree. I think they have better analysts on it. NBC does.
And you know what? It helps if you treat the sport like a priority, right? Like, you don't want to treat the sport like an afterthought on your own network because you got so many other things to promote. And I think with NBC, they're happy to have NASCAR, and they're willing to feature it on Saturday night, and they're willing to put, they're willing to spend to put good quality, recognizable analysts, and also some innovative camera shots and some cool technical stuff going on. I've heard that's a thing that could become more welcome as a TV event. You know, some of these big NASCAR races on NBC.
Yeah, I wanted to touch base on that. I want all the listeners to, they can see history in its making this weekend. This is the first time it's ever happened in NASCAR. So
the Sunday Chicago race.
Yeah, the street racing.
Yeah, I think that sounds really cool. I hope weather cooperates, and I hope folks check that out, because that does sound like it could be a cool thing and maybe a tradition. It's like when the pro sports, hockey and basketball, try to play like an outdoor game or something too. Like, just take your show on the road, make an event of it.
Right. You got any questions about NASCAR before I go?
I'm gonna try to check out some of that race on Sunday and check in with us next week. And Inspector, have a good 4th of July. Appreciate it.
You too.
334-321-1390, the number to dial. We are going to take a break. We'll be back with more. You're listening to The Drive.
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Friday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Brian, who else is on the team at AuburnSports.com?
Well,
shout him out.
Commodore J.G. Tate, of course. We've got
By the way, always
strange takes.
J.G. Tate, someone who, just a very important part of the Auburn beat over these last couple of decades, and someone who, I've always liked and admired. And, people used to say mean things about me on the internet, and JG would always come to my defense. I say used to. I know people still say mean things about me on the internet, but I know JG used to stand up for me a lot. So
that's good.
Yeah, I always liked JG.
And then, of course, we've got Caleb Jones running recruiting for us. I mentioned Stoltz and his interesting takes that he always has.
Stoltzy.
Yep. And then Henry Patton is our intern, doing a great job for us. Student here, too.
A solid, a motley crew.
Yes.
You've got there, if ever one was assembled. But guys doing great work following recruiting and keeping up with Auburn baseball, Auburn football, Auburn basketball. Lots of different stuff going on around the program at the moment. What's going on? I mean, is there anything? You've got media days coming up.
18th, I believe.
Yeah, I think like Auburn. 2 weeks from Tuesday will be Auburn's day in Nashville. So we'll be there pretty soon. Do you have any opinions about? We might have talked about this on Tuesday or on Monday. I mean, do you have any opinions about who Auburn could send to media days, who you think might be representing Auburn from the coaches?
Yeah, I think we did talk about this a little bit, but I just go back to some of the guys that Freeze talked about as leaders. Jason Jones was a guy that was mentioned there. The tight end room, the whole room was mentioned.
Luke Deal is someone that routinely. I think Marcus. Marcus Harris has been mentioned definitely. as a leader before too. Feels like any of the returnees in the secondary could be. They like to. I've seen Jalen Simpson front and center for things before. They've used Malcolm Johnson to as someone to represent the program as well. So, yeah, I mean it's different with a first year head coach because you would think they're going to take veterans, but maybe Hugh Freeze wants at least one of the guys that chose Auburn in the transfer portal to go out there at media days and talk about why they chose Auburn. Well, and
Peyton Thorne, of course, quarterbacks. You know,
Peyton Thorne would be a bit of a surprise to me because how about this? I'd be surprised if it was someone who didn't go through spring. Because it feels like if he didn't go through spring, the questions are a little bit it's a little bit tougher to ask questions about your teammates and about what kind of offseason you've had. Like, I would think, I would think that it's not going to be all one or the other. It's not going to be all incoming transfers. It's not going to be all holdovers from last year's team. I imagine it'll be a mix of both. I don't think they'll send a quarterback. And, I would imagine that. I think that was, I forget who had a Luke Deal. I think it was maybe Jason Caldwell. It was like if he had to guess one player that'll be the rep. He went with Luke Deal.
I got an outside one, Keonta Scott. And the reason I would bring up Keonta is he was one of the first guys they brought in for interviews during spring practice, and that to me also sends a message. That's a guy you trust, a guy you believe in, a guy who you've been impressed with in those few months that you've been a part of the program.
I would think about Keonta. I mean.
And he's a great player. He's going to be.
Keonta and DJ are both guys who could have left, right? Like, could have said, "Hey, too much turmoil, coaching change, no thanks." And here they are instead. Both of them would be great representatives. I mean, Nehemiah's been outspoken too. He's a little more shy, a little bit more reserved as a media figure, but a guy who has been through the fire of
Zion Puckett. Another guy's
later. Love Zion Puckett too. So I mean, there's a couple of options like that for sure. We'll find that out. I would think in the next week, 10 days, we'll know who the schools are going to bring as far as their reps. But yeah, looking forward to a media days in Nashville in just under 3 weeks as Auburn will be taking the stage on Tuesday, the second day of media days. We will have wall to wall coverage, by the way, here on ESPN 106.7. We're going to have all three shows broadcasting live. All 4 days of media days up in Nashville. I'll be there from the drive. We'll have Jacob up there from on the line, and the Max Roundtable will be up there in Radio Row. So we're gonna be hitting Broadway.
Where would people want to find you? Maybe later that evening. Where will you be?
Oh, I don't know. Watch. Do they still show Cops on TV? Do they still? That's where you can find. me. Is being chased out of some fine establishment. In Nashville, I really don't know that city very well. I'm gonna have to follow. I feel like there are some other sports writers.
It's a fun downtown.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to follow the lead of some other sports writers because I haven't been in Nashville very much.
Gotta go get some of that hot chicken. Go to a bar. You never know who you might see playing. You know, there's so much talent in that
become town. A big time food city. So I know I will indulge in some of that as well. And like last year, we'll probably drink our body weights in Diet Dr. Pepper. With all
those tiny little cups,
in those tiny little cups, take a million shots.
It's 2023. Can you get some bigger cups, please?
Oh no. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Is it asking so much?
Yeah. You'd think they could find a way. Maybe that's how they discourage you from drinking too much of it. Is they give you the tiny cups. Let's get to Mitch before we take a break. Mitch, how you doing?
Hey guys. Kind of piggyback on Spectre. Yeah. This may be the weekend. If you've never really watched NASCAR, you might want to. Check out this race in the streets of Chicago because I really enjoyed NASCAR on the road courses because they beat and bang unlike they can with the open wheel cars because you beat and bang with an open wheel car you tear off a wheel and you're done for the day. So it should be really interesting how this track is laid out and how they run it and everything. So sort of like he said, with the Coliseum in Los Angeles, but. Yeah, if you've never watched NASCAR, you might want to at least, check this out and see because it's going to be a lot more interesting, in my opinion, than, the Charlottes and the Atlantas and those cookie-cutter one-and-a-half.
I'll tell you what, Mitch, so they're going to have – I think they're going to have about 12 hours of coverage Saturday on USA Network of the – Xfinity Series races and practice and qualifying and things like that, the old NBC. So there used to be like an NBC Sports Network, and now and then sort of became and that's gone now. And so a lot of that programming, especially on event weekends, goes over to USA. So if you're interested in the NASCAR race this weekend, the USA is going to have about 12 hours of coverage tomorrow, starting in the morning of the practice and qualifying, Cup Series practice and qualifying, stuff like that. And then Sunday, I think right around 4 o'clock. Coverage starts on NBC, and the race itself is at 4:30. And yeah, those do sound like a race in downtown Chicago. You're right. Does seem like an unusual enough event that maybe the most casual or even non fans could tune in.
You know what?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say because hockey's done, basketball's done. I mean, you got Major League Baseball. I mean, not everybody's a hardcore Major League Baseball fan. Yeah. So I mean, if they're
When Major League Baseball takes their show on the road to an unusual ballpark or a foreign city or something that usually draws a bigger audience than it does when they're just playing a game at the standard home ballpark. So I think that's it's like when you were a kid, right? The field trip day, we get to go on a field trip. We're not going to do the normal day of school. We're going to go even if it's like a field trip to. Somewhere relatively mundane. Now that you're a grown up, right? It was an exciting day back when you were back when you were a kid.
Did y'all know that one of the biggest sporting events in the world starts tomorrow? Can you name it?
Ooh, is it the Tour de France?
That is it.
Tour de France.
Tour
okay,
de France, yeah.
I was gonna say Wimbledon's coming soon too. The Wimbledon draw, I believe, is maybe the Wimbledon draw is today. Starts today, or they unveil the draw for Wimbledon today, and the action starts. In the next
tomorrow,
couple of days.
I think.
Oh, maybe that's right. Maybe the draw is revealed today, and the action starts tomorrow. So yeah, I got a couple of huge sporting events. The race across France on the bikes, and the tennis tournament in England, both getting underway this weekend.
Yeah, well, a food thing real quick, Dan. Since you were out in California for a little while, there is a brand new Del Taco that opened this week on 98 in Santa Rosa Beach.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I didn't know Del Taco was expanding that far into the southeast. Although I guess I'm told there are Alabama locations, so I maybe shouldn't be too surprised.
Yeah, there's one in Dothan, I believe. My coworker told me there's one in Dothan, but also Rudy's Barbecue, which I went to the original one when I was in selection for combat control school back in 1994 outside of San Antonio. There's one of those in Panama City Beach on Back Beach Road also, which is kind of a long way from, you know, where they're normally at. But, I see so many Texas tags down here in the Panhandle, which, I mean, they've got their own Gulf Coast, but it must not – because I've never been to the Texas Gulf Coast. It must not be as nice or as pretty as it is here in the, you know, Destin from Gulf Shores to pretty much Panama City Beach.
You know, I'll tell you my thing, Mitch. I did not frequent Del Taco all that often when I lived in California because I felt like there were more local or even just the truck or the shack.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I'd much rather stop for I'd much rather get tacos off the back of a truck or something like that. Nothing against franchise tacos. Like if you wanted to go through a drive through or something and get yourself a couple of tacos or something, like nothing against fast casual Mexican or something like that. But I always thought there were a lot of options to get something a little bit more authentic. With maybe slightly better ingredients. I don't know. I want to be careful with my word choice here, but I don't blame anybody who has the hankering for a Del Taco or any other sort of taco off of a out of a drive through window.
Well, no. Well, I mean, there's you probably heard of Taco Town that's in Shalimar, right outside of Eglin. They've got the regular taco with just lettuce and cheese on it, and it's reasonably priced. And on Monday they have a special. And if I'm in that area on Mondays, I go in there. I don't ever go to Del.
They used to believe that might have been, maybe it's a restaurant with just the same name. Believe they used to have one very close to the high school that would do that one would do very well on the day where they would do the specials. That was a the Taco Time by the high school always did very well. Hey Mitch, we're up against a break. Have a great 4th of July. All right, great
hey,
talking
thanks,
as
guys.
Always.
You too.
You're sounding great, Mitch. The connectivity issues are largely a thing of the past, which is wonderful with your calls.
Okay, well, I'm sitting on my front porch right now looking, you know, at God's country here in North Walton County. So you guys can be envious. War Eagle will talk to you
soon. Enjoy the rest of your day. Enjoy your 4th of July weekend, and we will talk to you again soon. Great stuff. Mitch, we will be back to wrap up hour number 2 here on the Friday edition of The Drive. Stick around.
In 1958. At ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Final segment of the afternoon, final segment of the week. We're taking an extended break. No show Monday, no show Tuesday. We'll be back after the 4th of July holiday on Wednesday to talk about everything going on in the world of sports. We'll be coming up on the Major League Baseball draft at that point. It'll be just a couple of days away. And yep. Auburn having a couple players that could have a decision to make. As far as what to do, you know, some of them might be waiting until after the draft, right? They may see what happens in the draft and then make a decision about whether or not they want to try their fortune in college baseball again, or if they want to pursue a pro career. So lots of things could be going on. Brian, we are like we said earlier, ratcheting up the preseason coverage of football and baseball. You guys at AuburnSports.com, you'll have representatives at SEC Media Days in a couple of weeks, and then once we get back from Media Days, I mean, we're ready for fall practice to get started, and we're gearing up for the start of the season.
Yeah.
I mean, once
it's almost here.
I mean, we are this is the last show of June, right? So we are about 8-9 weeks away from the first football game of the year. Preseason coverage is you know only going to get more intense as every week passes. Tell folks how they can consume the great work that you guys do at AuburnSports.com.
Well, I appreciate that, and we will have plenty of recruiting, transfer coverage, preseason. Of course, we'll be at SEC Media Days, and you know another thing we haven't really talked about, but at the end of July, starting July 25th through July 31st, it's going to be another visit weekend or week. Auburn will have a ton of prospects through. They'll have Big Cat Weekend, may have some official visitors. Could be a really big recruiting week for Auburn. So that's coming up too, along with SEC Media Days.
Trying to gain some momentum there. Yes. at the end of the month when they can have folks back on yep. campus. So yeah, and again, wanna say we were joking about it earlier in the show, but be safe this 4th of July weekend,
please.
It's not, and not just from a fireworks standpoint, but that's part of it. Like that, yeah. I mean, be safe if you're around fireworks and things, but also, yeah. I mean, just the revelry, the heat, the possibility if you're around water. Like there's lots of different things where you know just safety first. Be careful. You know, have fun, but by all means, you know, have a happy, healthy, and safe 4th of July weekend, however yes. you choose to celebrate these next couple of days. Auburn, I believe, Tuesday night will be having the fireworks show. I know other places are doing a Monday night fireworks display, but I believe Auburn, City of Auburn, I think it's Tuesday night at Duck Sanford. So if you're looking for a fireworks show on Tuesday night on July 4th, you can see that one from a couple of different spots. I'm not going to give away my vantage point quite yet. I got a spot where you can.
Usually go over to the fields over there and watch it from there. But
I know some people say the mall parking lot has a great view. That's one of the spots that apparently has a you know, because you can imagine further down from there from where they launch them. Yeah. Like if you're in the mall parking lot, you could have a nice looking view there. But there are all over that side of town. The fireworks show is visible. So, yeah, hopefully you're able to enjoy it, but be safe and have a good time. Thanks for listening all week, too. You know who I want to thank? Brian Matthews for coming in 2 days this week. Justin Ferguson, Jason Caldwell. We had the on the line boys. Carter came in for a day, which was great. Back on Monday, Don Dunn and Jimmy Perry called in. It was great to talk with both of those guys about Terry Price. So, yeah, a lot of folks chipping in this week while Bill Cameron is on vacation. I want to extend my gratitude to everyone who was willing to help out with Bill Cameron taking a much-deserved break down on the Gulf Coast. We will be back on Wednesday. Bill will be back from his vacation, and we will tell you all about our 4th of July adventures. For everybody who helped put the show on the air this week, including Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com, as well as Drew, did a capable job as always at the controls. This is Dan Peck. Happy 4th of July, everybody. Signing off. Good night.